FNM Jams 103.7 The Beat, man. Got a very, very distinguished guest in the studio today. I love it. I love it when we chop it up. Dr. Randall Jakes Jokes is in the building today. How you doing today, sir?
I am doing well. How you doing?
All right. All right. Last time we talked, you dropped a book. Who was it? Richard Wright?
No, last...
Mays.
Benjamin Elijah Mays was president of Morehouse College from 1940 to 67.
Okay.
A real important era.
And so your latest book is on Langston Hughes.
Yes.
What made you pick Langston Hughes?
Well, Langston Hughes has been with me since, I would say, 1968, when I entered, I hate to say it, seventh grade in 1968. I had an English teacher in what was called then junior high school. You went from seventh, eighth, and ninth, and then you went to high school. So she made us learn poetry, and we had to, like at church, we had to memorize from Broad.
Like the Easter speech.
And that's correct, like the Easter speech. And she made us learn several different poems by Langston Hughes, whether it was the poem Harlem, or a poem I start off the book with is that I love so much was called Motto. I play it cool, I dig all jive. That's the reason I stay alive. My motto is I live and learn, dig and be dug in return.
Wow.
And so that was my first encounter with Hughes, and I encountered Hughes in college. And then when I began teaching at the University of Kansas, I met with colleagues and said, it's time for a documentary on Langston Hughes. People don't know about just the kind of fascinating life he lived. And I was like, okay, let's do this documentary on Langston Hughes. And because I think he was so inspirational to me as a young person. Not just his poetry, but the kind of interesting life he led.
Now, to people who don't know you, you know, Muskegon is like your second home. You know, you married, your wife is from here.
Yeah, she's from the Heights. She grew up in the Heights on Reynolds Street. We met in college, and we both attended the University of Michigan.
Yes, and your son have a business downtown.
That's right, Motu Lakeshore Wine Bar. Yep, that's correct.
And your daughter has property here.
Yep, my daughter has a property on. Yeah, that's right. So it is indeed a second home to us, and we're always here doing various things with family and friends.
Yes, but you are a college professor, right?
I am. I'm a university professor. I teach at Indiana University in Bloomington, Indiana. I teach in the Department of African American and African Diaspora Studies. I'm the Ruth N. Hall Professor of African American and African Diaspora Studies.
Wow. Wow. You at one time was at University of Kansas, too.
That's right. Well, my career spanned, I began my career in West Michigan at Calvin College, now Calvin University, I moved from Calvin after a good long stay and a good long stay of mentoring students. And then I moved to the University of Kansas and then to Indiana. And it was where at Kansas, I came to Kansas as the Langston Hughes visiting professor. So Langston Hughes' childhood was spent in Lawrence, Kansas, where the University of Kansas is.
Now, writers played a significant role in civil rights in the movement. Talk about Langston Hughes and his contributions.
Well, first of all, to talk about Langston Hughes is to also talk about Langston Hughes' family. His birth name was actually James Mercer Langston Hughes. He never went by James Mercer. His grandfather was a real abolitionist hero in Ohio during the fugitive slave laws. His grandfather, Charles Langston, led a rescue effort of a fugitive slaves law. It was called the Oberlin Wellington Raid, and it's in the history books, and was put on trial for locking and loading and going release somebody from the fugitive slave laws of the 1850s. Wow. His great uncle was the first U.S. Congress, a black congressperson elected to Congress from Virginia. So Langston came from an interesting family. His grandmother's first husband, Sheridan Lewis, died at Harper's Ferry with John Brown raiding the armory in Harper's Ferry. So his family had real abolitionist chops, so to speak. And he grew up with his grandmother till she died when he was about 13 or 14 years of age.
So what really motivated you to write about him? Was there any motivating fact outside of
title? I mean, first of all, the poetry. And when I was a college student, I wrote a paper about Langston Hughes, and that would diving into his life and his history and his biography. And I thought it told us a history. The second thing is, in 2022, I published a book called Letters to Martin, Meditations on Democracy in Black America. We wouldn't have I Have a Dream without Langston Hughes. Dr. King read Langston's Hughes's poem, I Dream of Freedom. And then called that into I Have a Dream.
Okay.
So all of these things kind of work together. Sometimes we forget that the writers and the creatives, and Langston was not just a poet. He was wrote short stories. He wrote novels. He was a playwright, columnist, and worldwide traveler. So all of those things were really, really important to get out. Sometimes we think of writers as a very simple people.
Right.
And we don't know much about Langston's early life like we do James Baldwin.
Right.
Because there was no television.
Exactly.
Right.
Right. Right. That's right. Are there modern day Langston Hughes?
Well, I'm sure there are.
are they getting the recognition? You know.
Well, I mean, writers do get it. I mean, what Langston wanted was not just in his day, but there was only so many people were able to get published on major publications. You know, that was a real struggle, right? It was so today he would be ecstatic how many great poets and writers we have that are published on the major labels about and major publishing houses, I should say. And that is something vastly different than in his time. I mean, he was a published poet in his early 20s by a major publishing company. And he was globally known by the 1930s. He was born in 1901. So you imagine this guy has something different to offer the world. And I remember my mother, you know, telling me about Langston Hughes in the South, you know, where I grew up till I was 14. New Orleans, there was only one black library.
Okay.
For the entire black population of New Orleans. You know, you can imagine that?
Yeah.
And it was a block and a half, not even a block and a half, a block from where I was born.
Okay.
And my mother would say that we learned to dream by the black librarians in the segregated library teaching us Langston Hughes. Wow. So if you can't dream, you can't work your way out of a situation. If you can't dream, you can't push yourself out of, you can only imagine you're stuck. And if you don't have somebody articulating the kind of suffering and pain that you feel, you're stuck. And that's what he was doing. He was and he was, in a sense, more privileged than the average Black person. So he articulated what the average working woman and man felt at the time.
Wow. Dr. Randall Jux joined us here inside the 4 o'clock hour. On this Tuesday afternoon, Judge Pittman's coming up inside the 5 o'clock hour. My America, Dr. Randall Jux. Now, you have a big distributor. This is like a big distributor here. I don't know.
It's a great publisher called Broadleaf Books out of Minneapolis. They've really been wonderful in distributing the book and putting advertising out and helping me get on I've been on a worldwide tour. I've been to the Rosa Parks Museum in Montgomery. I've been to New York City twice. I've been to Cleveland, where Langston Hughes practiced all his plays at. So I've been all over the country, and we'll end up in Chicago at the end of the month.
Wow. Page 146 said Langston would make amends for his highly critical but less than nuisance poem. Years later, he would write his long-running Christmas musical, Black Nativity.
Yes.
Which is performed annually in Black communities around the country.
Yes,
it is. The color of Christ was Black.
Yeah.
So his writing kind of changed that narrative.
Yes. I often say, I like saying, before James Brown in 1967 saying, "Say it loud, I'm Black and I'm proud," Langston was using the term Black. You know, night comes gently, Black like me. I mean, think about all of the ways that he, as a mixed race person, really, he is a mixed race person. He's using the term Black in a very radical and prophetic way to say that we were beautiful in the 1920s and the 30s and the 40s, when at the height in the torment of Jim Crow and lynching and so forth, he was saying, Black is beautiful.
Wow. Says the Messiah was the unassuming one that came to heal the sick, release the oppressed, and visit prisoners, all things that Langston had done during his days on earth as his Black Jesus.
Yeah. Yes.
Wow. It's powerful.
Thank you.
It's powerful. How can people get the book?
The people can get the book. They can go to Barnes & Noble. I know Barnes & Noble is carrying it. And that's the kind of biggest bookstore I know of in Muskegon area. In Grand Rapids, it's Schuller Books, Books & Mortar, and We Are Lit GR is another carrier. So all of them are carrying the book. You can order it from Amazon.
There you go. That's where we went.
or online, whatever choice of online book carriers you want to order it from.
I like, how do you navigate your life? Because you teach in Indiana and you stay in Grand Rapids and you got businesses. And I just wonder, how do you navigate all this?
I don't do it very well. I can tell you that. What I try to do is, you know, make time and chop out each day to do writing normally early in the morning. And when I try to tell my wife not to disturb me, which is futile. but I try to write every day a little bit. And teaching, I've been doing that so long. I can do that in my sleep. But I try to keep a creative and interesting life going on.
That's good. You write in the mornings.
Yes, I do.
You wake up, get up out of the bed, and grab a pen.
I stagger to the coffee pot, get some yogurt, and make some toast, and drink my coffee, and then try to get up and do a little writing for about an hour or two.
Wow.
Yeah.
So your expertise is African-American studies?
Or? African-American history, African history, yes. I went to Michigan State for my PhD program, mm-hmm. and I was in a program called the Comparative Black Histories program there. And so what we really did was study the kind of impact of the transatlantic slave trade on the Americas, not simply the United States. The slave trade affected the entirety of the Americas from north to south.
I'm figuring it out. I'm on my South American tour right now. Right.
So, you know, there are more black people in Brazil.
I just left there, man. Yeah,
than they are in the United States.
So. And a shameless plug, if you're listening, watch my Salvador edition from Brazil.
That's correct.
It just came out 6 days.
Salvador is...
Little Africa, right?
That's right. But so is Rio, or as the Brazilians say, Rio de Janeiro. I mean, oftentimes we talk about slavery as though it is just the province of the United States, but slavery happened in Cuba. The greatest revolution that occurred and the greatest successful slave revolt happened in Haiti. Yeah. And so we have to kind of broaden our definitions. I don't like these people talk about these Ados people talking about African descendants of slavery. That's through the Americas. If your folks were in Jamaica, Trinidad, Guyana, we name it, all of them experienced the horrors of the slave trade. Remember, roughly between 10 and 14 million people were transported to the Americas.
Yeah.
And only in the United States, we got 0.5% of those. But the United States grew slavery. So by the end of the Civil War, one out of five persons was an enslaved person.
Wow. So how many blacks do you believe was enslaved in total?
Well, the people who lived that we can document is roughly between, I would say, 12 million people.
12 million?
Yeah, 12 million.
In the United States?
No, in the Americas.
In the Americas. Okay, so that includes Brazil.
That's right. It includes from Argentina all the way up.
So what about United States?
Huh? So the percentage of the United States was about 0.5% of that total 14 million, 12 to 14
million. So 200,000 maybe.
Yeah, right. But the United States, you know, good American know-how, we grew it.
Okay. So do that include the babies that were born into slavery?
Oh, yeah. Because, the laws of slavery were normally the law in ancient slavery, if your father was free, you were free. Mm-hmm. But in the slave system in the United States, the status of the mother followed the child. Mm. So if the mother was enslaved, then the child was enslaved. And that was to the advantage of slaveholders.
Slaveholders.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry. I know we're supposed to talk about your books, but to have a man like you in the studio with all this knowledge.
This is an important part of why Langston Hughes' grandparents came to Kansas after the Oberlin Wellington raid. They were helping people be freedom seekers in Kansas. And so we can never sleep on Kansas in this story of America, because they were people helping people get across the Kansas River, and that meant you are free. And the Civil War really begins on the Missouri-Kansas border, the border wars, as they were called, before it was a full-scale Civil War.
Wow. Dr. Render Jokes is in the building. Question. I've been Sertiman books, a book. They came before Columbus. Do you believe blacks were here before Columbus?
Well, arrived? I believe we don't know enough about the kind of pre-quote Columbian world or the world before Columbus. There were lots of different people. The Chinese apparently made it to the Americas before Columbus, but had no interest in it. The crosswinds of the Atlantic certainly posed the possibility that black people across the Atlantic. We know little about the ancient world or it was re-described to us in ways that might not have been accurate. Let me put it that way.
Well, are black people the minority in the world?
Of course not. People of who are Black Africans, and their Arabs are live in Africa. Europeans live in Africa, but Black Africans. So, for instance, Nigeria is one of the fastest growing countries in the world. Probably will rival the United States in total population in the next 20 to 80 years.
Yeah, they are slowly creeping up there.
Yeah,
I believe it might be in the next 20 years.
Yeah, right, next 20 years. So I mean the possibilities of Africa is the only continent that is having babies, really. Yeah. And so so people who look like us will grow. And this is one of the interesting facts about Langston. He drops out of college becomes a sailor.
Okay.
And he sails all the way to Angola.
Oh, really?
And all the way back up, trying to figure out what is this tie to Africa? What does this really mean? So when he goes back to college, he does go back to college eventually. He has all of this worldly experience and so forth.
So this is in early 1900s.
In the 1920s.
1920s.
Yeah.
He's sailing to Angola.
Yeah. Yep. He was a seaman. He dumped all his books in the Hudson Bay, get on the first ship he got on was a dead ship, as they call it. And he just had to keep watch on, but he got his seaman's light and he went out to sea.
That was amazing.
Yeah. And so all of that comes through his writing. The other interesting thing about Langston is he spoke multiple languages. So he spoke both French and Spanish and read them and could translate them. And wow. So he translated other writers who are of African descent or women who want to be artists and so forth.
Wow. Dr. Randall Jokes is in the building. I've been doing a lot of traveling through South America on this travel channel. I have a documentary channel. I'm finding that a lot of these South American countries don't like the term black. The blacks do. The Afros do.
Yeah.
The Africans of these countries do.
Yeah, yeah.
The Afro-Panamanians, the Afro-Colombians,
right.
The Afro-Brazilians, they love it. But the whites there
hate because, it. Because it's a politicized term, right? I mean, there is no such thing. I tell my students all the time, there was no such thing as a black person before the encounter with the slave trade, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you've lived in Ghana.
Right.
So how many ethnicities are there in Ghana? About 50.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And with different languages.
Exactly.
Right?
Right.
All right. So we're ethnic people, right? So when I'm on the border of Holland and Germany, I can't tell the difference, but they can, right?
Right.
You know the linguistic difference, right?
Right.
So the idea of blackness became a way of marking people as slaves, enslaved people. And so, but we took that word, negras, negro, from Spanish to make it something very positive and creative in the world. And also something to challenge the existing system of governance, where people be exploited by their labor.
Mm. Wow. Thank you so much. Check him out. He's online. You're on Facebook.
I am on Facebook. Yep. I have two pages, Randall Maurice Jelks author page, and I have just my regular old page on Facebook. And Instagram too, as well. And my website is www.randallmauricejelks.com.
All right.
And my niece, who lives here in Muskegon Heights, runs my webpage.
Oh, really? What's your niece's name?
Olivia Johnson.
All right, Olivia. Yeah. Good job, Olivia.
Yeah.
Taking care of your uncle. Thank you for being available. Whenever you're in town, you don't need an invitation. If I'm here, just drop by. You have too much knowledge. To not share for us not.
Well,
share,
I try to get out there and share.
I know.
And you know, I'm waiting for my invitation from the Muskegon Public Library. I've been.
You haven't got one? Oh, yeah. We got to make that happen.
Yeah,
we got to connect now.
Yeah,
it's a done deal.
All right.
Well, yeah, they just don't know. They probably don't know about you because they knew about you.
Well, I've been trying. So
okay. Yeah. Okay. Wow. Wow. Well, we'll make sure they do that. Muskegon, Dr. Render, Joseph, anything you want to share before we go?
Well, I hope that people take a little time to read. I think that I learned reading from my mother and my grandparents. My grandparents read the Bible, but they read the newspaper. We still need to read all of this AI and other stuff. We still need to make our own judgments for ourselves and not trust other people who are creating data for us.
There you go. Dr. Render Jokes, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Judge Pittman is coming up next inside the 5 o'clock hour.